Okay. Nicole, if you want to go ahead and read item, hearing item number 3.
Hearing to consider a request by the Top of the Hill Gang for a vesting tentative track map development plan coastal development permit to subdivide an existing 13,844 square foot parcel into 7 parcels. County file number SGB 2010-00048. Supervisorial District 3. Project Manager Ryan Hostetter.
Good morning, members of the Commission. Ryan Hostetter, County Planning Staff. Let's see if we can get our PowerPoint up. Thanks, Nicole. Great. The project before you is a request by Top of the Hill Gang LLC to subdivide an existing 13,844 square foot site into 7 parcels for the development of 7 residential units. The project will also include road improvements and curb gutter sidewalk improvements. And the request is also to complete the project in 2 phases. The first phase would be units 1 and 2, and the remainder of the units would be in the second phase, and I'll have some better graphics of that in a moment. And also included with the project is 1 moderate restricted affordable dwelling unit. The project is located within the community of Avila Beach. It's at 298 San Luis Street. It's on the corner of San Luis and 2nd Street. It's within the residential multifamily land use category. This is a view of the community and where the site is in relation to the downtown area. It's at the top of the residential neighborhood. This is a zoomed-in view. It's a long, narrow site, and our aerial photo is a 2007 image, so you see some structures on the parcel, and I'll go into history in a moment, but the property is currently vacant. This property was subject to some previous permits that have been approved and developed. Most notable is there was a minor use permit, coastal development permit, to demolish the existing older structures that were on the site, and that was completed in April of 2006, and the property owners demolished the buildings in 2009. And additionally, the applicants or the property owners applied for a parcel map to subdivide that one site into 2. That was approved. However, it has not been recorded yet, but it is a tentative approval for that in April of 2009 by the Subdivision Review Board. So that brings us to the site today, which is vacant and has a tentative approval for 2 lots. And I found this picture. This is a view of the old Top of the Hill apartment from San Luis Street. This is what it used to look like, but now it's vacant, and I'll have more pictures of the current condition. The project before you today is to take the site and subdivide it into 7 separate parcels for development of 7 units. Included in this vesting tract map is a common access easement to access the units in the rear of the property and common parking area for these units on the back and walkways. This is what the phasing will look like on the ground. The first phase includes 2 units that are at the front of the site. Unit number 1 is the largest unit, and it's proposed for a vacation rental, and there's only 1 vacation rental proposed for the property, and that's in the conditions of approval. And the second unit here, which is attached, there in one building, will also be a part of phase one. The second, or the first phase, actually, the timing would be that those would be done in, I believe it's 5 years, and there's a condition that explains that. Beach Land Use Committee meetings, I think we had actually up to 4 meetings, and this project is an outcome of that. It originally had more units and more vacation rentals, and this was really a compromise between the developers and the community at 7 units with 1 vacation rental unit. It's more of a, I guess they can correct me if I'm wrong, but more of a Mediterranean-style stucco with tile roofs, and we have a color board to show as well. The proposed height is 25 feet approximately from average natural grade. This is an east elevation to show what the design looks like approximately. And this is the back of the project. And this site is, at the very back, it's steeply sloping. So that's why they're able to get more height within this one building is really indicative of the slope of the ground under where that building is. But this is at the back of the site. This is a color board. We have the hard copy here as well, but I thought this would be easier to see with a rendering of the buildings with the proposed colors and materials that are anticipated. And this is a view really from the corner looking northeast or more east of the project from San Luis and 2nd Street. And this picture is in a somewhat similar location of that where that rendering would be. Maybe we would be back a little bit more, but this is that corner today. So the site is vacant. It has been cleared based on those previous approvals. A portion of the site has been used for neighborhood parking, and the road improvements will include this I guess it's kind of a bulb out around the corner. It'll have a curb gutter sidewalk all the way around. And there's recently approved within the past 3 years, a multifamily project adjacent to this, which is in a similar scale. And it's going to be right about where that house is. So that was, it hasn't been developed yet, but it's another multifamily project that was approved next door. I also want to add that the road improvements in this project has been designed to tie in and flow into that recently approved neighboring project. So the engineer has met with that project's architect to design the road improvements and grading to match with that next door neighbor. This is a view from San Luis Street looking north. There's a lot of multifamily housing within this area. This is a project that has been constructed post-Avila cleanup that are more condominium units. This is looking the opposite direction towards the south. And then this is looking east, but this is back where the access easement is proposed on the new project. These are the neighboring condominiums, and you can kind of see it slopes down to the back of these other residences which front a neighboring street, Laurel Street. And those neighbors were a part of the design of this project in that they attended land use committee meetings, and there's a lot of discussion about drainage because it's sloping down into the backs of these parcels. And so that was engineered and accounted for through the initial design of the project. Before I finish with the staff recommendation, I did want to point out the applicant contacted me this morning, and there was one thing that we forgot to amend in the staff report based on an applicant request, and the staff is in agreement with the applicant. So that would be condition 31. It's on page 3-15 of your packet. And this is discussing the property manager for the vacation rentals, which is typical of conditions we use in other areas for vacation rentals, except for this was from a previous project that required the manager to live on site. And that was very specific to that project. And staff agrees that we don't necessarily need that for this particular project. There's one vacation rental, and so the staff is in agreement with the applicant in that we can just require a manager to be available 24 hours, but that they wouldn't need to live on site. So we're requesting to remove
District 2, like it says in the agenda. And I do have some questions, and I kind of want to do them first. So I don't know what kind of questions you guys have.
Do you, I have one technical question.
These are all technical questions. Yeah. So maybe I'll just ask them before we, that way that you guys can address them. The first one has to do with the vacation rental, and I wanted to know, is this a vacation rental? Like, is it only a vacation rental, or can it be owner-occupied?
It could be owner-occupied.
Okay.
You just have the ability to use it.
All right. And it's the only one that there cannot be any other vacation rentals.
Right.
Okay. And then the other question is, has to do with our vacation rental ordinance that we just passed? Has that passed the board yet? No.
No, and actually, in this area, it would need to get approved by the Coastal Commission process as
okay.
well.
So that's a while. So all of the vacation rental conditions, moving into the conditions, to page 3-15, are those semi-consistent with what we've talked about in terms of vacation rentals before?
Well, these are consistent with conditions that we currently have in Cambria and Cayucas.
Okay.
So we've used these conditions as well on other vacation rentals in Avila specifically.
Okay. All right. Okay, so I have a couple questions about the conditions then, going to condition one. I know you sent us a corrected staff report with some of the numbers corrected. Did you change the numbers in this one? I didn't see the conditions changed. So this one says that the parcels are ranging from 436 to 2,500, and they're not.
Oh.
And then that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to have added to this is that I would like the project will also, the language of the project will also include one of the units as vacation rental. It needs to say unit one can be considered, can be used as a vacation rental or can be used as. It just isn't, may be used as a vacation rental, so that way it can be used as a regular rental or owner-occupied or whatever else somebody wants to do with it. And the other thing is that the moderate income unit is not mentioned in the project description, which it needs to be also.
Okay, that was in another separate condition, but we can add that in this number one as well.
Yeah, I just think it should be a nice description of the whole thing accurately. Okay, then let's see here. Oh, I just wanted to comment that I really do like your change on number 31, because that was one of my questions, that I didn't really even see how it was possible to make the manager live in the complex. There's only going to be two units to begin with. So that didn't make any sense to me. So I'm glad we changed that. And all right, then now that we already entered that. Okay. All right, and then these are just, and then the same thing with I guess I didn't know if you wanted to change the neg deck, but its description is also needed to be changed. Page 3-37, the description. Again, the parcel says 436 to 2,500, and the size is wrong too. The size of the units, so that needs to be changed since we're approving a neg deck. Okay, those are just technical things I wanted to make sure we got clear at the beginning. Okay. That was all my, just, I wanted to kind of just get that stuff straightened out. Mr. Toppin, you had a quick one?
Okay, I can wait.
Okay, Mr. Murphy?
Is this a planned unit development with common areas, or is it just a tract that has common areas that are part of the deed, if there's a difference?
It's just
considered a PUD?
It's a planned development, and it has common area. Those common areas are really for the parking and not, access.
But not open space or green space or park?
Those are part of the project, but they're not within the common area. They're spread throughout the project, but they're located on individual lots. And as the applicant has described it, they anticipate having easements to get across and through the buildings in those areas, so they're not on a common lot, but they're using easements to accomplish that.
Mr. Murphy, Joe Morton from County Council. I just indicate that there's a this is a planned development, not a planned unit development, and the definition of the civil code allows either a common lot or an easement area or a homeowners association.
On into this and this in the staff's presentation to you, it's been a long journey through Avila, so the community has a lot of input as they usually do in these projects. So I think it's a product that meets with. With as many people's approval as possible, so there is one issue, and it's a timing issue. We have a place to export dirt that we'll be removing from the upper part of the site. It's immediately across the street, and if we can get the timing approved with you, pursuant to a valid Italy issued grading permit. Then we can reduce all those trucking fees associated with the export of the dirt by just moving it across the street. So we're not certain that we need to express approval, but it would be easier for us if we included in the approval the ability to export the dirt to an off-site location in Avila prior to the receipt of building permits pursuant to a grading permit. So is there a place in the staff report where you put that? I guess the question is for Public Works. Do we need that as a condition, or would we be allowed to secure a grading permit in advance of the securing of the building permits for the site?
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. Typically, the grading permits are issued by the planning department. I don't know if I can speak on behalf of the planning department. Typically, with a grading permit, Warren, I suspect you can do a grading permit without a building permit, so it seems if they have approval, they could apply for a grading permit without any sort of reference in these conditions?
That, I believe, is an option that can be pursued under an agreement for concurrent processing.
Okay.
Possibly Ryan or Nancy can add to my answer.
Yeah, this would be that would be a grading permit that would be associated with it. Project.
It will be consistent with the project. So,
yeah.
Okay. So I think we'll be able to handle this at staff level and not bother you any further with that. I'm sorry that I took up your time on that. Okay.
I think it'll work.
All the other issues that we've discussed with staff, I think we're going to be fine. So unless there's any other questions from me or from Mike, thank you for your time and appreciate your vote on this.
Okay. I do have a speaker slip from Alan Morton. And if anybody else wants to speak, now would be the time to get your speaker slip to me.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hi. I wasn't aware it was going to be so grand a occasion, but okay. I'm Alan Morton, and I own the property of 235 and 237 Laurel Street, which is adjacent to the back of the lot that they intend to develop. I have a couple of concerns that I want to address. First off, right now I have a garden fence at the back of my lot that is really on the side of the lot that they're going to develop. I'm concerned about a surcharge when they start building this property, where if from the drawings you can see that there's a three-story building going up at the back of the lot, with a garage and two floors. So that means the foundations and footings are going to be rather large. You're going to have heavy equipment in there to construct this. So I'm just concerned about my garden fence and whether it's going to impact the fencing, and are they going to take any precautions to mitigate my property basically collapsing. Because their property is about 5 feet higher than my property. That's one concern. Another concern was the drainage and the storm drainage. I believe the county has specific details on surge tanks and pumps and how to pump the water out in a storm condition. It's been suggested, I was approached to sell an easement through my property to mitigate the storm water flowing from the back of their property. It was suggested that without the easement, in a storm, maybe the power would go out and the pumps would fail and there would be overflow into my property. I believe, though, the surge tanks should be adequate to contain any water. I'm not sure. And the other problem would be the management of the property. If you've got pumps that back there pumping sewage and storm water, then I'm sure, though, the county has some restrictions on that sort of thing.
I'm sure they do.
So they're my concerns.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I don't have any other speaker slips, so we're going to bring it back to the commission. And Ryan or applicant, do you want to address the concerns raised by the speaker?
Ryan Hostetter, planning staff. I'll start, and then I'm going to ask Glenn Marshall from Public Works to talk about drainage issues. We talked about this in length in our land use committee meeting and about options versus a drainage easement, and if that would work with the neighbors, or if not, they are required to lift all of their drainage. That was the only other option for the applicant as an engineering solution. So I'll let Glenn Marshall talk more about that. However, as far as noise, we do have standard ordinance requirements for hours of construction operation, and those are applicable to all construction projects per the ordinance. And I think
I can read those if you need to.
Actually, I have them right here.
Okay.
Nancy Orton, County Planning. Construction activities are allowed to take place on weekdays between 7 a.m. and 9 p.m. and Saturdays and Sundays between 8 and 5 per the ordinance.
Okay. We'll talk about that. All right. Ryan, did you have anything you want to talk about in terms of the fence location and how that would be handled during construction?
Sure. Absolutely. That because of the narrowness of the property and the steep sloping conditions, we asked the applicant to do additional engineering geologic review, and the engineering geologist requires condition to stamp all of the grading plans, and they're required to be on site during grading activities to ensure that it's not going to be a hazardous condition, and they're not allowed to affect the neighboring property. So the geologist is really on site to ensure that the construction is going to proceed as planned on site.
Okay.
Glenn Marshall.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, Mr. Marshall, when you're talking about drainage, you want to talk about the idea of maintenance of the pumps and that kind of stuff too?
Certainly. Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. My understanding is that all the drainage that historically went to the backyard will be redirected towards San Luis Street, and that will have to be by some sort of pumping system. The engineer is going to be responsible to design a system that would meet county standards. Our standards, it's a unique one because First and foremost, we don't like pumps because of they do tend to fail in the rain in the wet season. So that appeared to be the only option the applicant had, so he'll have to satisfy the department that he has ample storage for failure of the pumps or some sort of backup system to get the water up. Given the extent that if it does fail, there may be civil issues between the property owners if damage does occur, and I don't know how to address that. With respect to maintenance of it, I would have to look through our additional map sheet to see if it's the responsibility of the HOA, and I believe it is, to maintain the system. And that's a darn good question. I'll look into that, and then I'll get report back on that.
So
would
this sump or basin be engineered to hold a maximum rainfall event without overflowing in case the pump did fail?
It would be my idea of what would have to happen is it would have to be sized similar to a sewage lift station, where we look at failures of lift stations and some sort of containment until a response is able to occur, or if they have a backup generator system. That's kind of what I envision this. Normally, we would have our county drainage standards say you have to retain or detain a 50-year storm event. Not necessarily applicable in this situation, so we'll just have to work it out with the engineer on the best and safest way to design the system.
I think you might mention sewage, but there's no sewage lift station on this, is there?
I'm looking at the applicant, and there will be a sewage lift station as well. That would be the responsibility, I would assume, of the owner of the apartment. The drainage would be, in my eyes, a shared responsibility.
Where are those tanks going to go?
I'm sorry, I was making changes.
Sure. I just asked, where are the tanks going to go?
I'm going to have the engineer. I believe that they're
could we put the,
below
the, site
the
plan
units,
up?
But I want the engineer to.
And then we'll capture that in a sump area with a pump and lift it back up. There's really no point in providing storage for stormwater because you don't have any control over the storm, where you would do that normally with a sewage lift station because people know their pump's not working and they don't use their bathrooms and washers and dryers. Here, if the pump fails or the power goes out, the water would spill over to where it went before, where it currently goes, and runs down towards Laurel Street. The only other alternative would be provide a generator if they knew the pump was out.
So the overflow with a pump failure would go to the northeast. Is that correct?
Yes. It would end up spilling over the existing retaining wall where it does now.
Mm-hmm. It would not go towards Mr. Morton's property. It would go the other way.
No, actually, Mr. Morton's property is located
right
opposite Lot 5.
Ah.
And you can see that unit is pushed back on the back of the property in the flatter area. And where that steep slope that runs down towards him, we won't really be impacting that area with buildings.
So you're saying there's no collection facility for either wastewater or drainage on site at that back end of the low end of the property?
Well, currently no, but we'll be alleviating all of that with this development. We'll take care of all the stormwater.
Yeah, I understand about pumps. I'm asking about collection, and it sounds like it's pumps only, right?
Yeah, but we'll route all of the stormwater subsurface and pipes to the pump. The only surface water that will land on the slope is just right there on the slope. We won't be contributing, we won't be directing downspouts out to the slope to where we're increasing water on the surface. So we'll tight line all of the downspouts with underground pipes that will go directly to the pump. That answer your question?
So yeah, there's no collection system.
So the
pumps and the drains and the pumps.
Well, there is a collection system from all of the buildings and all the impervious surfaces in a pipe to the pump, and then it gets lifted back up to San Luis Street.
There's no big
Big tank.
There's no big
No, there's no tank.
The
no, I'm sorry.
That's
no,
what I'm asking.
There's no tank because the tank would fill up like that.
Okay.
So the rainwater sump pump is a barrel type with a sump similar to what probably the sewage is then.
Similar, yeah.
Basically,
it would be a well.
A barrel with a pump in the bottom.
Yeah, and there'd be a pump at the bottom.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, but there's no basins, retention basins.
No, the stormwater accumulates so quickly that there's really no opportunity to hold a reasonable amount of water.
And the overflow from the rainwater pump then would flow down a natural, existing natural course?
It would spill over right where it does now, which is right at the very back corner, right there. And then go out towards Laurel Street, and then it crosses Laurel and crosses a couple of the lots down there. So we're taking a condition that's not really good at the moment, and we hope to fix it all with this development.
Okay.
I had another question.
Okay, Mr. Tolley. For this, Mr. Hodges, or just in general?
Perhaps. The question about the grading that Mr. Belcher mentioned. I'm interested in knowing what the relationship of that, the timing of that grading is to the geologic supervision of earth removal and or grading of the site for development.
So I'd actually, as a part of that, it would be to have the engineer explain where it's from and where it's to, and then we will have to evaluate that in the grading permit that we do on that project. So, Mike, you can talk about that.
Yeah, the Top of the Hill project is predominantly a cut project. We're going to have to take material off the property. We're working on another development across the street where the schoolhouse is, where we have an approval of Track 2667 Avila Bungalows, which is a fill requirement. So we thought it would be nice to minimize pollution and truck traffic and costs and just take some of that dirt from Top of the Hill over to the schoolhouse site across the street. So I think Ryan had told me at some point that a minor use permit would be required to do that. And I said, well, can we just wrap it all into this approval so that we can pull an early grading permit, make the cuts on the Top of the Hill property that we would have to make anyway for the development, and take some of that dirt across the street?
And I'm just simply asking, how does that affect the geologic supervision of the grading?
The uncompacted fill.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure that slope, that steep slope that goes down towards Mr. Morton's property is uncompacted. So we'll get equipment on the high side and reach out and pull that material back away from his property. So we won't have any equipment loads on that existing retaining wall between our property and his property. So we'll be very careful to make sure that we don't impose any loads on that wall.
So you don't see the need to put up any temporary barriers or orange fencing or...
Oh, that'll happen.
That'll happen.
Sure, yeah, we'll have silt fencing wrapping that whole lower side of the property.
If I can add in, I should have mentioned this earlier, the building code actually requires within so many feet of the property line you have to do shoring, and that's a part of building code requirements, so all of that will be accomplished with the building permit as well.
Yeah, this was just such a tight site. I was wondering actually how the engineer was going to accomplish.
Well, that's why that one building is rotated and pushed further back on the property in the steepest area and in the flattest area of the property to take care of Mr. Morton's concerns.
Okay. Ms. Hostetter, maybe the other remaining item from Mr. Morton's concerns was noise during construction, and I know there are some ordinance requirements. Maybe you could detail those for Mr. Morton.
Those are the requirements that Nancy had read into the record. They're the 7 in the morning to 9 on weekdays, and then on weekends 8 to 5 are the typical ordinance. Those are the ordinance.
That's the time of construction, but I think
He
was worried about the noise. What kinds of limits are there on the noise generated from the site?
There really isn't any noise. I mean, if you have a bulldozer, you have a if you have construction noise, it's construction noise. You can't really.
So there's no ordinance requirement.
No, it's really on the hours. Okay. Yeah, it's really the hours of the construction that you can limit. You can't really say, okay, you can't use a bulldozer on this piece of property because it's going to bother your neighbors.
Actually, maybe it would help if we read the actual words from the ordinance.
Sure.
There's an exception to the noise ordinance standards, and D is noise sources associated with construction, provided such activities do not take place before 7 a.m. or after 9 p.m. any day except Saturday or Sunday, or before 8 a.m. or after 5 p.m. on Saturday or Sunday. So the key phrase here is noise sources associated with construction are an exception with those hours. So if it's a bulldozer, if it's a jackhammer, they can do it.
Okay.
On the basis that it's, you know, it's a
temporary.
In a temporary situation.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Somebody want to continue on with questions, Mr. Topping? Your lights on.
I just have one thing I wanted to. I have no more questions. And the project looks like it's been well worked out. I did want to mention in regard to the engineering geology investigation that staff at my upon my inquiry had sent a note to us regarding the purported presence of the San Miguelito Fault, which shows up in the mitigated negative declaration, and that Ms. Hostetter has supplied some language which basically says that the engineering geology investigation up to this point finds no active fault on the site, contrary to what the original language of the negative declaration says. And Ryan suggested that we modify the negative declaration. And I was wondering if we might not also want to add that into the findings when we get around to make an approval action, if that's where we're going.
Do you want us to? What do you?
Since we spoke about the negative declaration amendment, I went and checked with our environmental coordinator's office, and they actually recommended that memo be the amendment and get filed with the proposed negative declaration.
Okay.
And that would be the appropriate way to do it based on their comments.
Sure. Then that it becomes part of their record. The question I think would be just for the commission's action, incorporating such a finding into our findings of approval, so that it's very clear that there's not a
relative to the demolition of that structure.
I mean, when it was built, when the structure was built, was there?
Oh, no.
There's none.
No, there are none.
Okay.
It's pre-permits? Yes.
Okay. And then there was a lot split into two parcels, I believe you said.
Yes.
Okay, were there any conditions attached to that lot split?
Yes.
And what were those?
Standard parcel map conditions. There was no development proposed with that, so it's just really a project description and then requiring the road improvements, which are consistent with the road improvements that are proposed with a tract map as well.
Well, I guess that was the point of my question, was yes. If there are any conditions existing pertaining to the land that this proposal before us
no.
is faithful to those conditions.
Right.
Okay. I'm concerned about the deferral of the affordable housing unit to phase two. I don't know why that's in the best interest of the county to allow that to be deferred, because that doesn't seem to me to be the intent of the board and their emphasis on affordable housing in our county. And also, when I read the relevant sections of Title 23, it seemed to me that the language there, as far as I think there's a paragraph on timing, and I believe at least what it said to me was that this type of housing had to be constructed concurrent with market rate units. So I wonder if you or county council could address why it's being proposed to be allowed to defer the affordable unit to phase two and not phase one.
The affordable housing requirements out of Title 23 kick into play when you build at least 11 units. And so this project is exempt from that requirement of affordable housing within Title 23. So we did not analyze it under that section because that section does not apply to this project. However, the specific plan in Avila Beach requires when you have a project between 4 and 11 units that you have a studio unit. So that is a part of this project as proposed, and the applicant is taking that studio and deed restricting it to a moderate unit. So as far as the deferral, that was a request by the applicant to include that in phase two. And as we have it before us, staff could not find any regulation that would eliminate their ability to be able to process it in that way. And basically, the first phase includes two units. So if they were to just do two units, there is no requirement for an affordable unit or a studio unit. So there was really no trigger with the two units. So they could just do that as a standalone project and there would never be a requirement. However, because when they build phase two, when they ask for the additional units, then that requirement is triggered, and that's why it's a part of phase two, as well as they're needing financing from construction of phase one to help their phase two project. So, and I'll let them elaborate on that.
Jim Orton. I just wanted to add, my understanding is that the parcel map is going to be recorded at one time to create all the lots. It's not a phase map. The phasing goes into the development of the development plan. So at the time of recordation of the map, there will be an agreement that will require the provision of the unit to ensure it's done.
Right. I'm looking at page 4-37 of 23.04.090, paragraph C, eligibility for bonus and allowable density, including bonus. C1.
What are you looking at?
Looking at Title 23, page 4-37. And C1 talks about the project size, and it says housing developments eligible for density bonus under this section must include 5 or more dwelling units. not including the bonus units. So this is seven.
We're not doing a density bonus with this project.
We're not doing it.
This is not a density bonus. There's no density bonus proposed with this project.
As I understand it, this is a request for an increase in floor area as allowed by SB 1818. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah. So it's
in the section for the 11 or more dwelling units or parcels. Is that related to the bonus as well, or?
It's a separate section in Title 23.
It's a separate section.
23-04.
So there's no bonus really. That's just affordable housing.
Yes. Right.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, it is.
Clear as mud sometimes, but I appreciate your help washing the mud off. Let's see. I also had questions about the vacation rental unit, as I think Commissioner Christensen mentioned, before we waded through a vacation rental ordinance a month or so ago. And I believe you said it isn't applicable because it's not incorporated yet and hasn't gone through the proper hoops. Nevertheless, I was interested. Well, two things. One, are there any conflicts between what you're proposing to do here with this project and what may be, at least what this commission proposed and voted on, and which may be carried through? Are we setting up some conflicts here by approving this? And second, by including a rental recognition of a rental unit in a development plan like this, does that convey any additional rights over and above our current ordinance, limited though it may be? In other words, I guess I'm not understanding why there is a why this is even part of this project proposal, as opposed to just as if it were an existing building after it's built, applying to have one of the units be a vacation rental.
The applicant is requesting to, rather than come in later after they build it and apply for a separate minor use permit to ask for the vacation rental, it was more efficient for them to make that request as a part of this project.
Matter of the cost of a second permit, then?
In timing, and they're already having to go through this development plan process, so it's efficient to include that within this request.
Okay, I think, and my fellow commissioners can correct my memory if it's flawed, which it may very well be, but on the ordinance we approved, wasn't there a time limit on vacation rentals and a tie-in with business licenses? Would this change that?
This doesn't. The business license is a county code requirement, so that still comes into play. All vacation rentals have to have a business license, and so this doesn't automatically grant them their business license. They still have to come in and apply for the business license from the county. So that's a separate process, and it happens after they receive either their minor use permit or their development plan, their land use approval for the vacation rental. Then they come in for their business license.
Yeah, if I remember under the vacation ordinance, if they don't do that, if they let it lapse, then I think the permit is revoked or...
I think that's for existing vacation rentals. They have so much time to come in and get up to code, so to speak.
But the main thing, Mr. O'Grady, is that really important for us to remember is that just because we passed a vacation rental ordinance does not mean it is law. It has to still go through the board and through the Coastal Commission. And other than that, it's kind of irrelevant. I mean, we'd like it to be relevant, but it isn't.
Well, I'm exploring this. That this is a condition that goes with the land, and I thought that was a key difference between having a vacation rental unit in this development plan as opposed to applying for a vacation rental permit under a minor use permit. So I'm asking that question. Is there a difference? I want to understand the implications of including a vacation rental unit as part of this development plan as opposed to applying for a minor use permit for one.
Mr. O'Grady, Nancy Orton, County Planning. A vacation rental business license, or if it's approved as a minor use permit, that runs with the land also. In other words, an owner can't transfer it if they move somewhere else.
Unless there's a time limit on the permit. Prohibited from applying for a minor use permit for one of the others.
They would have to come back in with this to amend the conditions of this development plan.
Yeah, it does say that. That's exactly what we're saying.
Well, okay, y'all say so, but saying that something is approved is not the same as saying that something else is not approved.
Well, that's what I wanted them. That's what I was talking to. Maybe I went too fast the earlier part, but that's what I was asking Ms. Hostetter, is that indeed the intention was that this be the only unit allowed to be a vacation rental in this development. She affirmed that, and I said, well, the language isn't as clear about that as I'd like it to be, so I would like to have condition 1 and possibly condition 32 modified slightly to make that clear.
Well,
that's what we're talking about. That's what I was talking about.
Okay, I thought you were just referring to the project shall also include one of the use of vacation rental in condition 1, but you want extra language.
I wanted to say this is the only vacation unit will be allowed is unit 1 as a vacation rental if desired.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, and that's not really what it says right now. It says one may be, and
right.
Under the vacation rental ordinance, I don't remember what the setback. I think it's only 50 feet. It could be that number 4 or 5 is 50
right.
feet away, and I don't know
right.
if that is in our tent here or not. I see Commissioner O'Grady's point. We're actually processing a minor use permit here as part of this process, but we're not
right. Well, I just that's why
we're not going through those procedures necessarily.
That's why I wanted to make that clear.
My point.
That was
incorporated into here.
This actually preempts anything that the board might pass down the line and just sets the ball rolling on
right.
its own track.
Right.
And it is a little different, it seems to me, because, for example, you got 7 days instead of the 4 times a month, which is what the commission recommended for the general purpose ordinance. But it doesn't really matter in a sense, because this has its own track as far as monitoring and enforcement, right?
Right.
Yeah, I believe it does make a difference. I mean, for example, if we said, no, we're not going to allow, we have the discretion not to allow the recognition of a unit as a vacation rental at this time and just say, hey, when it's built, then you apply for the vacation rental, at whatever ordinance is in effect at that time. That's an option we have. But anyway, the next question, if phase 2 is never built where the affordable housing unit is located, what happens then? How does the county get its affordable housing unit if this particular applicant does not proceed with phase 2, even though it's part of this map?
So there will either be 2 units and a map with a requirement that when they develop the rest of the project out, they have to include that affordable unit. That's an option. Or they come back and amend their approval to modify the project somehow. That's always an option in these projects.
Or if they sell the property and a new applicant comes in and says, well, it's not feasible to develop the rest of the property with an affordable unit, and then a planning commission at that time,
they
would review it and either hold the feet to the fire and say, you've got to do it, or I assume that's
yes.
what they would have to do. Am
yes.
I correct in that?
Right.
That's why I think putting the affordable unit phased and deferring it for 10 or 15 years is problematic.
Well, other than the incentive they're trying to win, would they be required with only 2 units to pay an affordable housing fee, or would there be any affordable requirement on a 2-unit project?
Let's see, the MAP fees. I'm trying to think. There's an affordable housing fee to record a MAP.
So that's,
I don't know if that kicks in for only two units, though.
So that, I mean, that there may not be an affordable requirement if all they ever build is two units. As well.
There is the, not a requirement to build.
The affordable housing, inclusionary housing ordinance is only in effect in the inland area.
Oh, okay.
Not in the coastal zone.
Okay. On page 3-8 in your agency review,
sorry.
No, that's okay. It's okay. On page 3-8 agency review, and notes an email from Public Works. Yeah, and I had, there's a, you know, a letter expressing concerns about the project and back in Public Works, and you said there was an email and these are resolved, but I didn't see that included here.
Actually, I think Glenn Marshall, he has the stack. I'm sorry, I forgot to pass that out. I made multiple copies of that email.
You know, we've all the rest of the units are 2 and 3 bedroom and 1,300 square feet to 2,500 square feet. This is 436. Are there no requirements on sizing or numbers of bedrooms or anything?
This is the proposed studio unit that the specific plan requires. And based on the building code, you have to have one room. You have to have a kitchen area, a closet, a bathroom. And you could go down to 220 square feet.
220?
Yes.
Okay.
About.
All right. Okay, so this complies then?
Yes.
All right. Okay, those are all my questions. Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any more lights, but I'm going to just ask a couple questions before I maybe make a motion. Ryan, could I see the, do you have any modifications to Exhibit B, a condition one that go with what I had talked about, my concerns, the changing of the 436. Okay, you change the numbers, and then you say the project will also allow.
Make it bigger for you.
Unit number.
Will also allow unit number one to be used as a vacation rental.
Rental. All right, and.
And unit four.
Is required to be an affordable unit of moderate. Okay. That's what I wanted to see. And then on condition number 27 in the same exhibit, I just wanted to. Not 27, condition 31. I want to note the change you made. You take out who will live in one of the units on site. Take out that and then remove all the references to resident, which is in that same sentence, next sentence in that same condition, also in condition 31A and condition 31B. And I think that's...
Commissioner Christensen, that first condition one or went by faster than I could
absorb.
Could
you go back to that?
Oh, I guess I'm not the only one. So,
I've been thinking about it, so.
These bifocals, I'm trying to read this. Not easy. Gosh.
My comment was I thought moderate should be low or moderate.
Oh.
Okay, that's fine. Good.
I would like to add the word only. The project will only allow unit number one.
Right. Very good. Thank you.
To be used as a vacation rental. Okay.
Good. Thank you. I knew there was something else. Okay, so we got the resident. Then I didn't know if we were going to do anything on condition 32, which was kind of where I was thinking about the only thing, but it basically says that, I suppose. Well, do Do we need to say that there's? Okay, I'm just going to leave that alone.
I think number one is approved development, and then this refines the conditions.
Yeah. Or else you could change number 27 to say only unit number one of building A shall be, may be used as a vacation rental. Can you do it that way? Only unit number one?
Right, that's a good idea.
A building A may be used as a vacation rental. It doesn't have to be used.
Yeah.
Okay, and put may.
Need the word may in there instead of shall.
There we go. Okay. And then the other change I had talked about earlier was on the in the neg deck under the project description on page 3-37. The numbers needed to be changed. It looked like you got those.
Yeah, the numbers. I had put the unit size instead of the parcel size accidentally. So
I know.
I
started looking for setback variances once I saw that. Because I'm thinking, wow, all the units are the same size of the lot. That's what those are, right? Coming right up there. It must be some kind of setback variance. Oops.
I apologize for that.
That's okay. I think that was the only place that I found those changes needed. I think everything else was pretty much really well done.
Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm.
Glenn Marshall, County Public Works. Ryan also has a recommended condition for your commission.
Oh.
Based on your astute observations about drainage.
Okay.
It's on 3-20, condition 17, add a new condition F. And it's on your screen right now. It states maintenance of all common storm drain facilities.
Okay.
And that's...
flows into the neighbor's house because the pump failed.
That'll be a concern of the engineer, the design engineer, and the county. And I think we should be able to deal with that. There's no action your commission needs to take on that. Okay.
Mr. Topping?
Yeah, just
Light.
Thank you.
Just if you're getting ready for a motion,
yes.
Just to follow through on the findings, I'd like to suggest that we add finding J under the heading Geology and Soils, which would state an investigation completed by GeoSolutions in a report dated July 11, 2011 states that no known fault crosses the potential building area.
Can you tell me again where to put this?
Yeah.
The finding J for the development plan is for the archaeology, the current finding J.
Sorry.
Oh, that's for the map.
I was looking at...
I think we're talking about two different finding pages. So.
Yeah.
Exhibit A.
Okay.
Exhibit A.
And this is after coastal access. And just to add the heading geology and soils.
Thank you, Mr. Topping.
And then... I'm just lifting this one sentence out of and modifying it slightly out of your paragraph that you gave us for the mitigated negative declaration, and it would be the second paragraph going down to the 1, 2, 3, 4th sentence, and it would read, an investigation completed by GeoSolutions, et cetera, states that no known fault crosses the potential building area. You with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me...
Okay. It's just the same sentence.
I have to format this.
Worded slightly differently.
Oops. And investigation to include... I'm going to have to format this, but the language will...
Yeah. The purpose is just simply to get a direct reference to that.
That's good.
Want me to reread it?
Yeah.
An investigation?
Was conducted...
completed by... was completed by GeoSolutions in a report dated July 11, 2011. States that...
Sorry.
No known fault crosses the potential building area.
There you go.
That's it. Good. Okay. I did want to say before I make a motion in regards to the neighbors' concerns about hours of construction and noise is that we do have limits on hours, and usually, you know, construction does not happen on during the weekends unless there's some specific issue they're working on with regard to, you know, not leaving something over a weekend if it's going to rain or that kind of thing. So I'm not so worried about, you know, jackhammers at bad times. And what happens if you restrict hours too much, you end up lengthening the time of construction. So you either go longer and noisy or you shorten it up and get the worst of it over with faster. So I thought about doing something different with the hours, but I think that our general ordinances are probably going to handle that just as well as anything else does. Okay, so with that, oh, Mr. Murphy, you got one, something else?
I just got to think about the phasing. Will all of the necessary grading for drainage be done in the initial phase, or is that going to be a problem?
The appropriate? Yeah, mitigation for the drainage will be done with each phase. So if it looked like phase one was the front part of the lot, which historically and will continue to drain to the road towards San Luis.
It's not part of the drainage feature in the back that's going that direction.
Exactly. As long as he's not adding or contributing to the neighbor's problems, it shouldn't be an issue.
Okay, so I'm going to go ahead and make a motion that we adopt the proposed mitigated neg deck in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA, Public Resources Code Section 21 et sec, and that we, as modified today, I've just changed those numbers, and that we approve the vesting tentative tract 3021 and the development plan, coastal development permit, based on the findings listed in Exhibit A as added to and Exhibit C, and the conditions listed in Exhibit B as modified, and Exhibit D.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Nicole?
How about discussion?
Oh, sure. Fine.
I cannot support this project for two reasons. Number one, because I don't think it's in the county's best interest to allow deferral of a construction of an affordable housing unit. And number two, I don't think it's in the neighbor's best interest to, and I believe it's also unnecessary, to approve vacation rental.
You rented for vacations in this development as opposed to throwing it up in the air and not knowing what is actually going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years. So I understand those concerns, and I think that they're certainly valid, but I disagree with them at this point. Mr. Murphy.
Yeah, I guess I wanted to comment on the affordable part. As long as phase one would not require affordable housing, that doesn't bother me because they wouldn't be required to put it in. On the vacation rental, the current ordinance, do we ever what's the highest requirement? Is it just a clearance, or is there minor use permits or conditional use permits required?
It's just a minor use permit, and there's no distance requirement in Avila. Right now, there are no vacation rental regulations in Avila, just in Cambria and Cayucas
now, until
it's amended.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm almost to the point, I think it maybe shouldn't even be in there, but since it's in there, I don't know that it hurts anything since there's no restrictions anyway. So I guess I could support it.
Okay, and Nicole?
Chairperson Christensen?
Yes.
Mr. Topping?
Yes.
Mr. Irving?
Yes.
Mr. O'Grady?
No.
And Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
Okay, 4-1. Thank you very much. Thank you, Ms. Hostetter, for your efforts here. And like I said before, possibly the person who proofread your report might have helped a little bit more. But that's just to be teasing.
Like I said, you can blame it on me, but wait till December
3rd. Okay, I'll blame it on you in December. All right, so do I have a motion to take all the testimony and documents into the record today, received today, into the record?
So moved.
Do you have a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
And do I have a motion to adjourn?
Madam Chair?
Oh. I'll move.
Oh. Yeah.
Uh-oh.
We need to craft this adjournment.
Okay.
The adjournment should be to Friday.
Oh, well, that's right.
November 18th at 9 a.m. at the Fairways at Dairy Creek at El Toro Regional Park for your Planning Commission retreat.
I amend my motion in accordance with what Mr. Hogue just said.
Move to Friday, November 18th at the Fairways at Dairy Creek.
I think before we adjourn, we should recognize that this is Mr. Hogue's last regular Planning Commission meeting in his long tenure with the Building Department. the planning and building and the county. And I want to thank him for all the great work he's done helping at least me, and I think the whole group of us brand new three people coming on at once. It's been an amazing year when you look at all the projects. We've two solar projects, vacation.
Maybe that's why he's leaving.
Event. Yeah, maybe they damn near got rid of us.
It's our fault.
It's definitely more, the job was more than advertised, but it's amazing how much has got done this year, but I don't know that we want to repeat it next year.
There's a rumor going around. Have you heard it? That Mr. Hogue is interested in being on the Planning Commission.
I think that falls in the category of no good deed goes unpunished.
Yeah, so. Ken, did you?
Yeah, I'd like to say a little more specifically what I've found of value in Warren's presence, and that is especially thoughtfulness as to when to intervene and how to intervene in a very gracious and remindful way, remindful of our responsibilities, and as well as facilitative. So I think good staff work is something that we need to constantly be aware is a rare commodity, and I think we're blessed here with our staff, and particularly with Warren Service.
You're here.
You're
Thank
here.
You.
Oh, one more question.
of course.
It would be from me.
Can you cut his mic off?
any hints as to who will next be sentenced to serve with us?
Actually,
Planning Commission meetings.
Ms. Griffin is going to take over this role for a year or so.
Okay.
And then eventually the plan at this point is to transition to Ellen Carroll.
Okay.
What they're doing with the two divisions, environmental and current planning, is merging them after I go. I guess I'm irreplaceable. And Ellen will be the manager over the combined divisions with Nancy Orton continuing her role as supervising planner in current planning functions, and John Nall in environmental review functions as the supervising specialist. But they will, Nancy and John will have blended responsibilities for the teams. So that's the plan now. And then Cammie, I think, wants to